magnet hospital working conditions, violence in the healthcare workplace, and acetaminophen warning. And we're going to take a look at acetaminophen in a drug review this week. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, also known as the Pod Medic, but I'm also a nurse and I'm here to take care of bringing you up to date on what's been going on in healthcare and nursing news this week, as well as our regular tip of the week. We'll be looking at the medication acetaminophen. You know, it's something we give a lot, but perhaps we need to go ahead and review a little bit about some recent things going on, as well as general patient considerations and nursing concerns. And we'll do all of that a little bit later on after the news. Of course, I want to make sure that you get all of the information from this week's episode. So whether you're watching this episode on one of our video segments over on the Roku box or on the website at nursingshow.com, or you're listening to this via a podcast download, either way, you'll want to make sure that you check out the show notes resources available over at nursingshow.com. Head over to nursingshow.com and you'll find a link right at the top of the page for the show notes. You can check out the most recent episode there and scroll down in reverse chronological order to find previous episodes. Go ahead and check out in there. You'll find links to all the news items discussed in each and every episode, as well as additional resource links for each week's tip of the week or interview segment. And it's important because I think that you can listen to me maybe review something briefly here for 10 or 15 minutes, but for more in-depth information and to find out exactly how it might apply to your own specific practice and scope of practice, you should definitely use these additional resource links that I have provided for you. And I make sure that those links go to credible resources. For instance, today's links, we have links to some toxicology resources, as well as a link directly to some patient educational materials from drug manufacturers regarding acetaminophen. So all of that information I provide for you so that you have additional things available to follow up and get more in-depth information. Of course, you can also leave any comments you might have over on the website at nursingshow.com, or you can email me directly. Send those emails in to nursingshow@gmail.com. I love to hear from you and the many ways that you contact me, whether it's via Twitter. Of course, I'm under the handle PodMedic on Twitter, twitter.com/PodMedic, or via Facebook or the Nursing Show Facebook fan page. Any way you might want to contact me, I will get back to you. I try to respond back to you as quickly as possible. So if you send me an email to nursingshow@gmail.com or leave a message for me over on Facebook or on the Nursing Show Facebook fan page, you can find all of that information and I will respond back to you. Of course, if you leave a comment over in a more public forum, we can have a little bit of a discussion and maybe bring other members of the Nursing Show community in on that discussion as well. I look forward to hearing from you in any case, whether you're a student, a long-standing nurse. Bring me any ideas for links for future news items. Perhaps you have a tip idea or suggestion for a future episode, or perhaps a correction. I make mistakes too, and I want to make sure that the information presented here is the best possible information available. So send those corrections in as well, and make sure that we get the best information here available on this community effort here at The Nursing Show. Time to jump into this week's news, and I'll lead off this week's news items with a recent story I found over at medicalnewstoday.com, and this is a study from the University of Maryland School of Nursing, and they were looking at workplace conditions in magnet hospitals. Now, those of you that know probably already know this, but magnet hospitals are facilities that have raised certain departments or perhaps the whole facility to a certain level of care expectation. Most often, they require nurses that work there to have BSNs in those departments that have the magnet status, and they are constantly reviewing and raising educational concerns and information for increased and better patient care and patient outcomes. Great for the patients, but by just working at a magnet hospital, does that mean that your work conditions as a nurse are better? Is nurse staffing better? You're working with a higher educated caliber of nurse. I want to say higher caliber in general because, a bachelor's degree does not a fantastic nurse make automatically, but certainly a nurse with a higher level of education, a higher understanding, and perhaps a higher base of critical thinking. So you have good patient care outcomes, but what about good work environment? And what this study found was that just because you work in a magnet hospital doesn't mean that your working conditions are necessarily better, that this is really a separate management concern. Focusing on patient outcomes is all well and good, but there are other things, other factors that contribute to workplace satisfaction. And that's what this particular article found out. And really, actually, when you think about it and those concerns, it's not really that much of a surprise. Yes, you have a higher requirement for the nursing staff educationally, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you will also have better workplace conditions or better staffing and staffing, I don't know, enjoyment, for lack of a better way to put it. So doesn't mean it's worse, doesn't mean it's better, but definitely is not an indicator that if you work in a magnet facility that you're going to enjoy your job better. You should look at all aspects of any employer. And as we run into the beginning of the new fall semester, we have a lot of new nursing students coming in here, and perhaps this is their final year. They're going to be looking at jobs. Perhaps you just passed your nursing boards, your recent graduate, and you're looking at different facilities and where you'd like to work. So you should always ask some questions. I've done this in the past. If you check over at nursingshow.com and search for nurse interview tips or tips for new nurses, you will find some articles and other segments over there that I've put together in the past, talking about the fact that no matter where you are in your nursing career, when you go to interview for a job, one of the things you should bring with you is your list of questions that you have for your prospective employer. You know, it doesn't hurt you to ask good questions about the workplace. It shows you're interested, it shows you're engaged, and it lets them know that those types of questions are on the minds of their prospective applicants. And so you should ask questions about other services available to the facility. Go online, look at your hospital's websites, look at your prospective employer's website, and find out a little bit more about their background and jot down a few questions to bring to the interview yourself. And this will help you find the right fit for you. What is a good fit for some people in some facilities is not necessarily true for everyone. And so you need to find the right job that's going to fit your perspective, style in workplace, style in patient care. And so magnet hospitals may not be the perfect job for you. Let's jump on into the next segment here as I jump on over. There's been continual evidence that violence in the workplace for healthcare professionals at all levels is underreported. If a patient is combative because of a head injury, because of sedation, and they take a swing at you, it's violence, but does that get reported necessarily? If a patient's combative and you have to wrestle them, technically that's violence, but it's not, it doesn't get reported very frequently. So there is going to be some new guidance for the UK on how violence is recorded in the workplace. And this is part of the National Health Service Security Management Service. And they have launched a guidance on different ways to mark patient records so that if a patient has been violent with healthcare professionals in the past or there's some indication that they tend to lash out and become combative under certain situations, wouldn't it be nice if there was something in the chart to warn you about this? And so there are going to be procedures in place that are going to be put in place by the National Health Service in the UK to put violence markers on electronic and paper records. Is this something we're already doing here? Again, it's underreported. How often do you place in the chart that the patient was combative and it took three of us to hold them down? You may have put something in there, but did it get marked anywhere else? Did a flag get put on that when a patient is found to be repeatedly combative whenever they're sedated? And this is something that we need to look at. in our facilities. It's easy for the UK to do this kind of thing. They have a national health service, so they can have a national standard. It's more difficult here in the United States. And I think this is one of those things that different nursing organizations, professional organizations, perhaps the emergency nurses, the critical care nurses, the American Nursing Association should look into and propose a series of standardized language, standardized ways of notating potentially violent patient in the care record so that future professionals dealing with them will be forewarned and be able to be on the lookout and be extra prepared. In my other line as a paramedic on my other show, The Medicast, I end every episode with the words scene safety, BSI, scene safety and body substance isolation. It's something that new emergency medical services professionals have to learn about because we're going into the field so frequently and having to protect ourselves and be aware of our surroundings. Situational awareness is just as important in the hospital setting, especially because you might often let your guard down thinking that, hey, I'm at work. I've got my friends and coworkers around me. I'm not necessarily a potential victim of violence in the workplace. And yet we find that that's really not the case. And different levels and aspects of violence are inflicted upon healthcare professionals in facilities all the time. And so hopefully we can come up with a way to document this and do so more appropriately. And I'm looking forward to finding out more about what's going on in the UK and how they're going to be doing this. And perhaps we can bring some of those procedures and policies here to the United States. Finally, an article, a study that recently came out showing that acetaminophen may be a trigger for teen asthma attacks. Now, why do I bring this up? Anytime I see an article like this that gets out into the public, I am constantly reminded that as medical professionals, we need to understand what these studies are saying, and we need to be able to speak intelligently about them should we receive a question from one of our patients. It's important because the news media will go out there and put something like this out on the internet or out on their websites or on their health pages on in their newspapers. And what happens is that patients hear this and change the way that they're medicating themselves. And we should always, always be educating our patients that if you read some article, you need to check with your healthcare professional. The person who told you to take a certain medication, to use a certain nutritional supplement, whatever the case may be, don't just stop taking something until you've contacted the medical professional who told you to take it. And this is true for something as inane as Tylenol. It is not a dangerous drug when used appropriately. And even though this study showed that there was an increased asthma risk for some patients, that asthma risk is still not that great. I mean, it's an increased risk for an existing patient that has asthma, but it may not be necessarily an indication that you should stop taking Tylenol. So we need to be able to educate our patients whenever studies that talk about medications come out and reach news headlines, because ultimately, a lot of our patients just go, oh, we can't use Tylenol anymore, and they may switch to something else that is not as appropriate to treat the problem at hand that may cause other side effects. And switching from one analgesic to another, over-the-counter, probably not too much of an issue, but if you have patients that were put on Tylenol because they have GI issues and the family of NSAIDs, the anti-inflammatories out there, cause these patients typically to have more risk of GI bleeds. Well, an isolated low risk of a possible asthma attack might be just a less significant problem to deal with than a patient developing a slow GI bleed by taking too much of an ibuprofen or some other over-the-counter anti-inflammatory medication for pain management. So we need to be able to speak intelligently about what we're seeing and be able to educate our patients about, hey, when you read something, don't just read the headline, read the whole article. Because as for instance, and I'll just slide down here, at the very bottom of this article, the authors of the study say that it is a safe drug and there's no imminent threat to patients. But for some people at high risk, it might be important for their prescribers to advise them appropriately about whether this drug would be a good choice for them. So this is, you know, the standard disclaimer, but it's all the way at the bottom of the article. So we need to go ahead and educate our patients that don't just read the headlines. The headlines are out there to freak you out. They are used to cause a little bit of a fear reaction, so you'll read the article. That's how headlines are written. So if you patients should understand that and not have a knee-jerk reaction to just reading a headline, because, of course, the headline doesn't tell the whole story, and you need to have the whole story and then talk to a medical professional, like your nurse, to go ahead and find out what exactly this particular article means. So I urge you to follow up on this link and the other links in the show notes for the news items. You'll find those links over at nursingshow.com. Just click the show notes link at the top of the page. You'll find this week's episode and all the other episodes listed there. Time now for this week's tip of the week, and let's jump on in and take a look at this week's segment on acetaminophen. This is a commonly used drug. It's medication we give in facilities. We advise parents to give it to their kids. We do some limited drug education on it, but I think it's become so common that maybe we don't do enough education on these types of medications that are so routinely used that we just assume our patients are using them safely and effectively. So let's spend a little time talking about acetaminophen. We're going to look at a couple of different things. We're going to look at acetaminophen. Of course, it's Tylenol is the brand name, but the generic is acetaminophen. And we need to recognize both. We need to educate our patients how to recognize both because of some concerns we'll talk about a little bit later on. We'll look at the mechanism of action, common uses, routes, and doses for the medication, and also common nursing considerations, and some additional resource information that I think you might find interesting for use with your patients or with your staff, whatever the case may be. So what about the mechanism of action? Tylenol, or acetaminophen, inhibits prostaglandin production, and this is mediators that moderate our pain response and our febrile responses to infection or some illness. It does this by raising the pain threshold and by moderating those heat centers in the brain. So it's a central nervous system effect. It does not have any anti-inflammatory effects. So when you have a patient that might have a sports injury, this may not be the best medication to use as a first-line treatment simply because that type of pain, while Tylenol will deal with the pain, it won't do anything for the inflammation that's causing the pain. So in situations where an injury is suspected, an anti-inflammatory may be a better choice for that type of a problem. However, Tylenol will raise the pain threshold. It raises the amount of pain that the patient can tolerate. So it doesn't do anything for the underlying causes of the pain. It's simply a central nervous system effect. There are few, if any, GI-associated side effects with this medication. So for those patients that can't take some of the common anti-inflammatories because of GI upset, they can more safely probably take Tylenol or acetaminophen. And that's probably why it's used more frequently in a hospital setting where we are concerned about nausea and other stomach upset issues. Indications and routes for this medication. Well, obviously, it's a class of medications considered an analgesic and antipyretic. It is indicated for mild pain or fever for patients. So again, this is not going to be something that you're going to use for somebody with a broken leg. They're going to need something a little stronger. However, Tylenol may be used for breakthrough pain. So they're on an opioid pain management regimen for the short term, and Tylenol may be utilized to assist with some of the pain that might break through in between doses of their opioid. So it's something to consider. And of course, for general pain management for pain patients with aches, pains, headache, whatever. It is administered via either the oral or the rectal route. So there are suppository versions available of this medication. Preparations additionally to the suppositories are your liquids, your syrups for children and those adults who can't take pills because they are out there. You also have your common cat chewables for younger children and also adults, and then tablets capsules, et cetera, available in your standard, whatever the medication company is formulating at this given time. But certainly, it's going to be coming in one end or the other of the GI tract, so it's not administered via any other route. Common dosing for adults, 325 to 650 milligrams per dose over a 4 to 6 hour period. For children, that dose is somewhere between 10 to 20 milligrams per kilogram per 4 to 6 hour dose. And you need to monitor your patients carefully. Obviously, you need to understand what the dosing requirements are. It seems like a very broad dosing, but this is an over-the-counter medication. There's the regular strength and the extra strength version. So the extra strength version is where you get into that 650 milligram range. The regular strength version, 325. Some of the things to keep in mind as a nurse about this medication, and this is really where we come into being better as patient educators and helping to understand exactly what we need to be looking for as a nurse. Again, it's a commonly used medication. We might be glossing over the fact that there are some things we need to keep in mind with this and any medication we give. So just because it's not a prescription drug, just because it's something so common that you can buy in a convenience store, doesn't mean that it's not something that you should be aware about some specific items for your patients. First of all, you need to always have a good history on your patients. You need to have an understanding of what's been going on. Patients with a poor nutrition or perhaps a history of alcoholism are going to have issues with this medication. Again, one of the biggest issues with Tylenol is the toxicity that can be caused when this is overdosed. So if you take too much Tylenol over a prolonged period of time or a large amount in a single instance, you can develop severe liver toxicity and cause liver failure. And when that happens, there's no going back. There is an antidote. We'll talk about that a little bit at the end of this segment. But you have to recognize there's been an overdose and administer the antidote. And the problem is, of course, that there aren't a whole lot of side effects associated with overdosing on this medication. You don't realize that the overdose occurred if you accidentally overdosed until the liver failure starts to happen. And after 24 hours, you can't really get back away from the toxic effects of Tylenol, or acetaminophen in this case. So we need to make sure that we are aware of patients' histories, anything that inhibits their liver function or their renal function, because we want them to be able to eliminate the medication through the urinary tract. Anything that inhibits renal function is going to cause increased levels of the medication to build up in the blood, and that causes increased liver toxicity issues. So we really need to monitor and understand our patient's history. There is a risk for hepatic failure, so we need to monitor our liver function labs and also our kidney function labs. So when we have a patient in a facility and we're getting regular lab work done, we need to really just be checking and making sure that they're showing signs of good renal and hepatic function. There are some signs, in depending on the device, that taking acetaminophen on a regular basis may throw off or alter blood sugar readings. And this can be both in blood draws, but also in the AccuCheck devices. So check with your pharmacist if you're in a facility. Check with your device if you're in a location, home care, or perhaps in a physician's office. Read the accompanying documentation for any AccuCheck device. And of course, if you're giving a device, training a patient on how to use a specific device, you want to make sure that you understand how something like Tylenol or acetaminophen might affect the blood sugar readings for that particular device. So depending on how the device manufacturers are creating their device to read blood sugar, there may be something that either causes a high or a low reading, and it really depends on where their design function is causing an issue. So just be aware of that. I think that most places have kind of dealt with this and observed it, but if you've got a patient that you're really monitoring blood sugar levels very closely and they're taking acetaminophen for pain relief, you might want to just double check with the pharmacist and double check with whoever's in charge of utilizing and monitoring your blood sugar devices on the floor that, hey, you know, is this a concern? Something to be aware of. And I found it in the literature. And again, there's some information in the resources provided with the links in this episode. So you can definitely follow up on more information on that yourself. Many over-the-counter drugs contain acetaminophen, and this is really a patient education issue. Patients who overdose or take too much acetaminophen and cause liver toxicity problems are not just teenagers who grab the first pill bottle and take a whole bottle of Tylenol or acetaminophen in their home and then don't tell anybody and decide that, hey, nobody needs to know that I just had a suicide attempt because they don't have any side effects. So they think they're fine. And this progresses. That's not always the way that people overdose. In fact, it's not the most common way people overdose on Tylenol. It happens more frequently in settings where your common cold, allergy, sinus medications are contain levels of acetaminophen for pain relief that associated with the symptoms of a cold, sinus attack, allergies. And so you'll have things like antihistamines, other medications, and then acetaminophen added in for general pain relief and fever management. If you take an over-the-counter cold medication, or your patient takes an over-the-counter cold medication that contains acetaminophen, and they go ahead and take acetaminophen for their pain, not realizing that they've already got some on board, you can quickly build up to toxic levels if patient's taking this medication on over a day or a couple of days to manage a common cold. So we need to educate our patients to read labels carefully. And this is why I say they don't just look for Tylenol, they need to look for the generic acetaminophen. And if it's in the label on the medication, the over-the-counter drug they're taking, they need to be educated that that means you can't take any extra, that you've already taken some. So this is something that we need to make sure a big patient education issue. And I've actually got a link in the show notes to the Tox Tidbit segment from about a year ago, I think, where we talked with Lisa Booz, and she talked about acetaminophen overdoses and as a specific issue. And so you can check that link in the show notes and check out that episode from about a year ago to hear some of the specific toxicology issues associated with that. There are also combination medications that we might give to a patient. So we might have a combination of acetaminophen and an opioid, codeine might be included, so that the patient's getting that opioid pain management, and they also are getting the acetaminophen pain management that together provides a different level of pain relief. And so this is commonly seen, something to be aware of, something like in some of these medications that you're going to find. So read your drug guides carefully, check any medications you're not sure of, so that you make sure that there is not also acetaminophen included in that med. And if there is, you need to educate your patients again, just like with the over-the-counter cold medications, that, hey, we have to make sure that you're aware that there is acetaminophen in this drug. Don't take acetaminophen or Tylenol if you're taking this medication too. There is an antidote for an overdose with this medication. Acetylcysteine is the name of the drug. It has some very specific administration parameters. And one of the things that Lisa talked about in that segment on acetaminophen overdoses was Lisa recommended that if you suspect a Tylenol or acetaminophen overdose, that you go ahead and contact your local poison center. They have some information on dosing guidelines, and that information is there for you. So it's a great resource, and I urge you to make use of it. Plus, they will follow up with you and make sure that the proper amount of dosing is getting on board, that monitoring for side effects and also any other things that might need to be considered regarding acetylcysteine and treatment of an acetaminophen overdose. So utilize those resources. The Poison Center is there for you to use. And again, that number in the U.S. is 1-800-222-1222. So if you're looking, and that's not just an emergency call number, you can call that number just for I need some information. So definitely utilize that resource. And I know Lisa talks about that whenever she's on the show, but we definitely want to make sure that you're including that information for you as well. The Nursing Show Tox Tidbit segment, again, I provide a link in the show notes so you have some additional resources to go to there. Lisa comes on here. I'm glad we have her. Maybe she comes on about 10 times a year, about once a month or so, and she shares some information, and she did share a recent episode about a year ago on acetaminophen overdose, so you can find that link in the show notes. Also, don't pass up the opportunity. If you're in a facility to talk to whoever your pharmacist is for your floor, depending on the size of your facility, you might have a regular pharmacist during the daytime that works on your unit, or maybe 24 hours working on your unit. Utilize that resource, get to know that person, and ask them questions about even the more common medications so that you can be better prepared to help out and treat your patients and educate your patients. If you're working in a home care setting or you're in a smaller community or in a facility setting, go ahead and check with your pharmacy in the facility or in a community setting. Pharmacists are more than happy to talk to anybody, including medical professionals, about specific medication concerns. And I know I talk with my pharmacist all the time just when I, you know, read something in the news and I want to get their take on it. This is their professional bailiwick. So let's go ahead and take advantage of the opportunity to learn from them. I also found a great link resource for additional handouts, patient education materials, and this is over at the Tylenol branded site. There's actually a site for healthcare professionals about Tylenol and, of course, concurrently acetaminophen. So check it out, TylenolProfessional.com. There's links for additional information on the medication itself, as well as patient handouts that you can download and print out, and other resource links about this medication. So I was pretty pleased to find that, and I like when medication companies, drug companies are out there making sure that the professional information is available for us. And we often maybe discount and badmouth drug companies and they get a bad rap, but they are out there to provide material and information to educate us and their patients about the safe and effective and good use of their medications that they produce. So let's utilize those materials. And I found this link and there's a lot of good stuff there. So I urge you to check that out. Here are some additional resources that you might want to check out as well. I've got a link to the Maryland Poison Center, mdpoison.com, as well as, again, that link to the Tylenol Professional specific page on educational materials, and also an article I found over at medicinenet.com on Tylenol and the medication in general. So you can check all those links out in the show notes for this episode. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to remind you that you'll find all of the links and information to this and every other episode over at nursingshow.com. I urge you to follow up on that information, find what you need to find regarding any particular episode, whether it's a link to the news articles or additional resource links. I always try to provide two or three additional links to some more information on whatever the topic of the week is or the interview segment is about. So go over to nursingshow.com. You'll find the links to the show notes right at the top of the page. Click on that link. You'll find the most recent episode. And of course, you can scroll down and find previous episodes as well. Follow up on those resource links. And I can continue to provide you general information here on the show, but it's your job to make sure you understand how that specific information will apply to your own nursing practice, instructional guidelines, whatever the case may be. Of course, I urge you to get back in touch with me. You can leave a comment on any of the articles or show notes pages over on the site. There's a comments link at the top of the bottom of each page. You can also go ahead and shoot me an email. Send that email in to nursingshow@gmail.com. I love to hear from you. So if you send me an email, I will get back to you. I work hard and try to respond to each and every email that you send. So get in touch with me. Let me know what you're thinking about and where you are in your nursing career, either as a student or as a nurse or a retired nurse or someone who just is interested in healthcare and nursing. Whatever the case may be, I love to hear back from you. You can also always catch up with me over on Facebook and Twitter. Twitter.com/podmedic and Facebook.com/podmedic are my Facebook and Twitter locations, each respectively. You can also join and become a fan of the Nursing Show fan page. We're getting close to 500 fans over there, and I'd like you to be one of them. So head over to Facebook.com/nursingshow and click the like button right there at the top of the page. And when you do that, you become a fan of the show, and I provide additional links over there. I ask questions to the fans of the Nursing Show via that Facebook page. So there's some additional ways to contact me, get in touch with me, and also interact with myself and other members and fans of the show. So definitely check that out over at Facebook.com/nursingshow. That's it for me. I want to head on out of here, and as I leave, remind you that we will be back in another week. Every Friday, we bring out the Nursing Show, and I look forward to hearing from you and catching up with you again next week. In the meantime, let's wrap up with a song from the PodSafe Music Network. This is an artist by the name of Johanna Staley, one of her songs. We've played these songs before, I think, but one of my favorites. It's called I'm Not Perfect, and certainly it's true. If anyone knows my wife, you'll know that's true. But it does mean that we can strive to be better and learn more, and that's one of the things I try to do here at The Nursing Show. So check out Johanna's link in the show notes. Let her know you heard it here on The Nursing Show. There's also a link there to purchase her songs over at iTunes. So if you like what you hear, you know, spend a $1, $1.29, whatever it is, pick up one of her songs and let her know you heard it here on The Nursing Show, and show your support for independent artists like Johanna that share their music with us in the podcasting space, so they're we're not beholden to the record labels and their requirements and things that they put on radio stations, because if that was the case, we wouldn't play any music. I'll be back again next week, again every Friday, and in the meantime, I want to remind you, I'm Jamie Davis, and please remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.